Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew, and we have a very special episode today. And my co-host Melody is here to tell you all about it.
Hi, Andrew. We do have a very special guest with us today. We've got Scott Homan, who is not only the creator, director, producer, and editor of a documentary called Witness Underground. He is also an ex-Jehovah's Witness himself. And he's here to not only tell us about his documentary, but also to share a little bit also of his personal story of being an ex-Jehovah's Witness. Scott, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having us, Melody and Andrew. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. And I'm just going to say this right off the bat, because I may sit back and I never sit back and just listen. But I watched the documentary, and it is just superb. So kudos to Scott for putting out a great, and we'll tell everybody where they can watch the documentary at the end. So
yes, for sure.
All right. Witnessunderground.com.
There you go.
All right. Drop off quick.
Well, yeah, maybe we should say that. The name of the documentary is Witness Underground, and it's I saw it on Amazon, and Scott will tell us where they can find it elsewhere. But let's get into this. So Scott, tell us how you did this documentary, and we know that you're an ex-Jehovah Witness, so I'm sure that has something to do with it. Take it from here.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't know, because Jehovah's Witnesses have a reputation. Most people think they know what Jehovah's Witnesses are or how they've interacted with them. Is usually they might know that they don't celebrate Christmas or birthdays or other holidays, or that they knock on doors and talk about the Bible. But it also, they are, additionally, that's all true. They're a doomsday group. They preach that it is the end of the world right now, and you might not survive Jesus coming here to murder everyone. You're probably going to die soon. And they're the only path to salvation, basically. And you can live forever in their paradise with just them as the sole survivors. So the thing that my film is about isn't really about any of that. That is just, that's what some of the stuff about that community and what they teach. The film is really about the dark side that no one really knows about with Jehovah's Witnesses, and surprisingly don't know about, which is the shunning. So if you joined that group, or if you were raised around it or born in it, and you at some point realize that it's not the end of the world, or that you think you can celebrate your birthday, or if you smoke a cigarette, or if you have a thought that is incongruent with their teachings, they can cut you off for the rest of your life from your family members. And in fact, they force your family to do this emotional abuse practice that ostracizes and you as an individual, or that individual, and rips families apart for the rest of their lives. It's very, very, like, they're coerced into doing this practice. because they believe that if they don't do it, they will also be killed by Jesus. So the film explores like the intensity of someone losing their community, losing their innocence, losing their belief system, and just the tragedy around families being torn apart, while also showing people surviving that and having a life after getting out of that, which most films never even take. Well, a lot of films like discuss that with like the fallout from leaving religion, but this film also shows like how you can use art to heal and through self-expression and move on. And like maybe their lives aren't perfect, they're not necessarily rock stars, but they like got through the thing and made a life outside. So film's kind of unique in that it has it gets better angle.
And I love the fact too that it actually it goes into detail about the deconstruction process, because people that leave a cult, we all go through that deconstruction process, and you actually talk about that and how difficult that can be and how it's different for everyone. It doesn't look the same for all of us. We all have to do that in our own way, our own time. And and you really brought a light to that. And I love that part of the documentary. And it was, I'm just going to say, like Andrew, it was a really well-made documentary, really touches your heart. And it really gets an insight into the Jehovah's Witnesses that you don't always see. And like you said, the sides of it that most average people that aren't familiar with it aren't going to know. So that was awesome. Amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and let me just add, as a non-cult survivor, and I grew up with JWs knocking on my door. They were there every Sunday, and I'm talking 15 years. I remember them. I could tell you a funny story about how I scared one of them away one day. I'll tell you the story. Every Sunday, they would come knocking on the door, and I had a 6-foot red-tailed Colombian boa snake as a pet. And so one day I answered the door with a snake around my neck, and they never came back to my house. So,
through image of Satan.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of what I was going. That's kind of what I was trying to get at. But yeah, more on a serious note, I knew nothing about them. And even when I started this podcast, we've had a few XJWs come on and tell their story. I learned so much from your documentary that I knew nothing about. Everything from, there was talk about Noah's Ark and how that couldn't have possibly happened, that there are 8 million Jehovah's Witnesses in the world, roughly, I think you said roughly. And it was just, I learned, and hearing some of the ex-JWs, the people that you had on, which we could talk about some of them, it was just fascinating. And the shunning that you talked about and separation of the family, I believe I wrote the notes down here. Ryan, maybe? Who was it that his brother died? Ryan? Rhett? Ryan,
yeah.
And Ryan. Rhett passed away?
Yeah.
That he was not allowed to go to his funeral. And it's just unbelievable stuff that, as an outsider, you don't know that this is going on inside, you know? And so thank you for shedding the light on this. It's just horrible, horrible what they're doing.
Were you born into the Jehovah's Witnesses? How did you end up getting involved in that? Most people are usually born in, but not all. So what is your story of how you got involved?
Yeah, in my case, it's kind of strange and unique. Like my grandparents got involved with it, with the religion, when they were like in another state far away. Like I didn't really meet them until I was, a young child. But they got involved with it and got my dad remotely. They were in New Mexico, Florida, like doing their retirement thing. And they got involved with this, which is kind of how they hook people. They're like, oh, someone died or you're new here. You're vulnerable. Like we can get you into our community. So my grandparents got sucked into it, and they're World War II vets. So like as a pacifist, non-military, non-political group. And so for them, they like kept their friends with all their military friends, and they would go to the VFW. So they're like actually really balanced about their interaction with the religion, I think, as grandparents in their retirement. But my parents and all my aunts and uncles started going and checking it out because their parents were like, hey, you should do this. You have kids. You're raising kids. Like, check out this religion. It's true. All the other ones aren't true. And they're like, oh, weird. Okay, I'll check it out. So my dad started studying with the Jehovah's Witnesses and was while raising five kids and, you know, slowly started taking us when my mom would put up with it and try to get everyone rallied together, get ready to go to church, basically. And so it was like over a 4 or 5 year period where our family was like slowly getting involved. And then it was like, here, put on these headphones. Don't read your book that you need to for school or like the fun thing for a kid. Listen to this indoctrination cassette tape and push play and like follow with your hand along the book and like make sure you pause and then listen to the question and then try to find the answer to the question. I was like doing indoctrination sessions. There's like a 6 or 8 year old in my bedroom because my dad's like, you need to know this. This is important. So it was this weird thing where I was like, I tell people I was influenced by a cult, but my mom never really joined it. And like, I didn't really have any friends or peers my age in it. So like, I grew up with like high school friends and like I did some sports and I did all the extracurricular stuff after school. And all my friends were like Pentecostals, Catholics, Lutherans, and atheists. And like, I was in bands with them and like did all the fun things, got into snowboarding and skateboarding with that community of humans. And it wasn't until I was like a late teenager where I started meeting other Jehovah's Witnesses that were my age in like the next town over, like an hour away. So in a way, I have this like, I feel like that might be, there's no clear moment where I was like, I became a Jehovah's Witness. And then I like, the cutoff is more clear. But at the same time, I was like, I was going to college, which you're not allowed to do. So I was like, I was very on the fringe of that culture where they wouldn't really accept me as one of them. And
right.
Even my friends who were not, you know, a part of that, they were like, oh, Scott's in this weird cult. And it's like, well, they were kind of not accepting me, really. They did, but like I was like a little bit on the outside. I never went to any of their birthdays, so it was like I was between two worlds, kind of not quite a part of any one of them deeply.
Wow, how did you come? You're in New Zealand now, I understand.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, and that's have you always lived there, or
I just got here actually. The film brought me here, so now I'm following. Oh. I'm like work for Witness Underground, the movie, because. We just had our international premiere here 2 weeks ago for the Decult Cult Awareness Conference, the first ever conference like it.
Awesome.
So you're on a promo tour. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
How did you come to pick the group of people like Ryan and Eric and James and all the they're in Minnesota? How did you come to focus on that? Because there's lots of XJWs around the world. What made you pick them?
Yeah, it's okay. The shortest way to say this is when I was 19, I left the religion. Like I took a break from it, but I was still like, they call it physically out, mentally in, where I was like still indoctrinated, but I was having trouble with the beliefs, but I wasn't going anymore because I didn't have to. And then I went with an old friend who'd also, it was in a similar situation when we were living in Madison, Wisconsin, like away from our families and hometown. And I was like, do you ever go to the Kingdom Hall anymore? And I expect him to say no, but he like lied to me and he said yes. We went to church one time after like not going for 6 months and neither of us knew anyone there. The like really interesting people were there that knew these musicians in Minnesota. And that kind of launched me into this, oh, there's like really interesting Jehovah's Witnesses. I didn't know that. There's musicians. Maybe we should like go to their concert. And so we did. I like met these people and became friends with them. And then like, I had been in bands, and then around that time, I formed another band, but I had started to meet Jehovah's Witness artists, and so I formed a band with Jehovah's Witnesses, because that has been like my world, and I was, you know, like between two worlds. I tried it out, and I got to know all these people in Minnesota through like that one connection I made, that one time I went to church again, and then later, you know, 10 years later, I was started doing interviews with former Jehovah's Witnesses for my YouTube channel called XJW Coming Out on YouTube. And through that, I was like, you know, I'm making these interviews and I reached out to Eric because I've been close friends with Eric in the film because I like ended up moving to Minneapolis. I got to know them and I was like, I was on the fringes of the Jehovah's Witnesses. I was going to college there and but going to their shows sometimes when they had concerts, but they didn't really like, I wasn't really a part of their music community. I kind of was like on the fringes of it. They didn't really accept me. So that's how I got to know them. And I thought, you know, this would be a more interesting way to tell the XJW story is through musicians and show off their incredible music.
Okay. So to the audience, because as they're listening to this, they probably have not seen the documentary. And I would hope once they finish this episode, they go run to their TV and turn it on. But they don't know what we're talking about. So in the documentary, you focus on a group of, and this, I got a little confused at the beginning. In the beginning, you have a graphic that says, this film depicts ex-JW and some current JW. Who was still current?
Okay. Yeah, so there's five people that we interview in the movie. That's right. Already a lot of humans for a documentary to be interviewed. And so the first like third of the movie kind of chronicles their time in the religion as artists in the religion. And so I guess that graphic was trying to say that because we couldn't get any active Jehovah's Witnesses from that music scene to be a part of the film, and I did try, we depicted a number of currently right now, they're still active members of the religion in that first section of the movie to kind of tell about the scene, but from archive. So everyone that's interviewed is talking about when they were a Jehovah's Witness and about some people who are still Jehovah's Witnesses. And then later it's like mostly about the people that got out.
Okay.
Who are the people that we interviewed.
So most of the people that are not most, the documentary is about a group of people who form when they were young. I think Cindy was 17. They form a music group, right? A band.
It's actually a scene of like many bands. There's like 20 bands or so.
Yeah, right. There were, I couldn't keep track of how many of the names. Even Melody and I were even high, like Hi-Fi was name of one of the bands.
Hi-Fi is a song by the band High TV, and it's
You're right, Melody. It was High TV. Okay, all right. We couldn't figure that out. It wasn't clear in the documentary, but I actually want to watch it again because as I was watching it, I was watching it as a podcaster trying to catch up, write notes, but now I want to sit back and watch it. The documentary focuses on several members that were ex-JW that started to, what Melody and I know of and you know of, is start to critically think about the belief system that JW preaches. And like you talked about earlier, they can destroy your family. But one of the ones that I can remember was, I think it was Ryan writing to James Zimmerman about Noah's Ark, right? Mm-hmm. So like he doubted the fact that that Noah's Ark even happened. And and the letter that James at the time because he was an elder maybe, or he was high up.
Yeah, they
in
were
there,
all rising up the hierarchy of the religion.
He answered Ryan, and it was interesting to see that. And then all of a sudden there's James Zimmerman being interviewed. So the whole thing was just fascinating and well done. But the bottom line is these are a bunch of young people back then who created and were part of a music festival in Minneapolis or Minnesota. I'm sorry. And what I found interesting was I didn't think that they would even be allowed to do that. Like, so in my experience as an outsider of cults, we hear that many cults shun on cell phones and technology and TV. You can't watch TV. You can't. And I know one of them in JW can't read books or literature outside of Watchtower, right? Or their teachings.
Secular music.
I found it interesting that they allowed them secular music. I found it interesting that they allowed them to play music.
It's very unprecedented. Since making the film, I've met people in, I think it was Brisbane or Melbourne, Australia, who had a music scene. Some people in SoCal and like San Diego had a music scene. In Portland and Seattle, there was a Jehovah's Witness, like kind of quiet music scene. And in Germany, actually, when I was an active witness, we were in Germany and we got taken to like a Nazi bunker. They've reconverted all these Nazi bunkers to music practice spaces because they're like, they can't really destroy them. They're so well built. They're built to withstand bombs. So they turn them into music spaces. So we went after a Jehovah's Witness meeting church thing with Jehovah's Witness artists to play a private concert for other musicians, me and my brother. So it was sort of like tolerated, I think, where it was like, you know, as long as you don't tell everyone, you just like keep it on the DL. You can kind of do whatever you want when it comes to making music, but you can't sing about God. That's off limits. So
I know
it was all very secular, which is also kind of strange, right? You'd think a Christian group could. That would be the one thing you could do, but they're like, no, you can't do that.
Right. So I do have a question then. I mean, and I don't know if you know the answer to this. Do you think that maybe this is no longer tolerated or allowed And has your documentary possibly influenced the fact that this might actually be an outlet that might be helping to create the critical thinking that they actually don't want in the group? Do you know the answer to that?
I don't know the answer to that. I think the movie's still pretty new. So like it just came out a few months ago. And so it can still have an impact, and hopefully it'll have a lasting impact. And I would hope that it wouldn't rob the active members from that outlet that allows them, that then, you know, triggers critical thinking to start happening right for them. And I think that comes from just like, if you're making art and trying to write lyrics, or you're letting yourself like emotionally flow or whatever, to do the creative act of music creation or whatever it is that you do, that is the thing that like automatically happens. Like, oh, this is what I actually believe. It just is like a piece of it. I would hope that the film wouldn't change that. But I think that the religion's critical and, or sorry, secretive enough on an individual basis that people would do it in secret anyways.
In secret. Hence, Underground. The name of, yeah, right. Have you had any blowback from JW, from their headquarters?
No. And I originally making this and the series that came before the film, the XJW coming out series, I was a bit afraid that would happen. But if you look online for anything critical of the religion, they're not taking down anyone's videos. They're not going after anyone. There's quite a few different films that are pointing a finger directly at the Watchtower, and they've done nothing about it, which is kind of surprising to me because they're like a litigation powerhouse, and the power of art is like the first thing authoritarian groups go after. Like in V for Vendetta, for example, there's like hidden art collections that you go to jail if they get found out. In fiction, but also that's what regimes do, that they don't do that, but they go to Supreme Court and fight for like the like laws to change or child sex abuse stuff, but they won't.
Do you have a theory?
They won't fight against an artist. It's interesting.
Do you have a theory as to why that is, or are you still kind of trying to figure that out?
I don't. I have no idea. Yeah. I thought it would be really good for the marketing of the movie if they did try to litigate just my movie.
right.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Because we recently had a lawyer on who helps cult survivors litigate financially, get some
civil
suits. Do you remember their name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Carol Murchison.
Carol Murchison. Yep. Do you know her?
No, but just people should know. So I just wanted to like make sure she gets plugged.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. She was just on maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right.
We our podcast ourselves have had threats from Twin Flames some episode, because we had some ex Twin Flame members on and they threatened lawsuits. So that's kind of why I asked the question. So I guess it depends on the cult.
Shows how vulnerable Twin Flames is if they're like going after a podcast, because like it's a very small drop in the ocean.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was silly. And from what our talk with Carol, and we had another person on who, a woman named Paulette Buchanan, who was very immersed in the cult world because she's fighting for awareness. We were told they can't really do a lawsuit. It's frivolous. And
the First Amendment rights to be able to talk about reality.
That's
one thing that's great about the Constitution and the amendments.
The key word, is using the word allegedly a lot in front of or behind what you say or accuse somebody of, or to say in my experience, you know, to make it more unique or not, you know, not name names specifically. Those are the ways you can cover yourself legally. But I do have another question about the documentary itself. I assume that doing the documentary was part of your healing process and part of your healing journey. Can you share with our audience how that helped you in your healing journey?
It's a great question. And at the Q&A here in New Zealand, someone asked how that went, and it got me really emotional and vulnerable. But essentially, I think I started doing the interviews on the XJW channel on YouTube, XJW coming out, as a way to kind of process my own story. And I was behind the camera, just one person in front of the camera telling their story, as a way for me to like relate to and process my own feelings about it. It's quite hard to have to lose your family to a cult. And ultimately, like, they're the real victims, right? Like, I can get emotional about not having a connection with my parents or my siblings and my grandparents. And yeah, like the you know, brothers and sisters-in-laws who are connected to my siblings. But at the same time, like, they're trapped in this thing, and they're going to church 3 days a week and believing and having, they're experiencing cognitive dissonance and they have to do this ugly thing to me or they might be killed by their leader, you know? So like the fact that they're trapped is like, they're the real victims. But ultimately, like, yes, making the movie was very much, it had therapeutic moments, but it also is just incredibly triggering. So I feel like if you're thinking about your personal experience and you're thinking that making a movie or interviewing people might help you, I would suggest first getting therapy, which I eventually did. Actually, it was like editing the film in 2021. And, you know, and in addition to like experiencing the pandemic and lockdown, I was also like watching scenes from this movie every single day for like a year straight. Which is like, it's just a really heavy topic to like select from. So like there's also 15 hours of interview footage where these five people are telling their stories and I got to put 10 minutes of or 15 minutes of each of them in the movie. So there's a lot of stuff I had to cut out and making those decisions and like thinking about my story and how their story relates to my story. Cause ultimately like I went through a very similar thing that all of these five people went through. And I wanted to make sure I captured the things that really impacted me personally. That's a lot to handle.
Did you not want to insert yourself in this documentary for any particular reason?
Yeah. I mean, part of it was a style choice. Like there's a lot of there are many different kinds of documentary styles and most people go the easy route, which is tell their own story and be on camera in the thing that they make. And I find that I don't like that style very much and I didn't want to be that person. I'm not saying that there's not to knock that. I actually am thinking about making that exact film now. I think it was because people have been asking me like, well, it's your story. It's fascinating. You made this film. Like, we don't know anything about you. You're not in it. And that was a choice like from the very beginning. Like, I'm not going to tell my story. That's not what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't easier to tell someone else's story personally from my emotional position.
Maybe this is part of your process is that you needed to do this first. And now your story might be next. And so anybody out there who might want to hear the rest of Scott's story, stay tuned. I mean, that might be coming down the road. So, and it does sound like, and I know I'm probably going to be hitting a nerve here, but it sounds like you have lost a lot of your family members due to leaving. Is there anybody in your immediate circle or family that has also left? Do you have anybody that you're still connected to that is your family that is going through that same process that you are, that you can reach out to?
There are two people in my extended family who never joined the religion, but everyone in our shared family, extended family are in it. So, but we're never really close, but I can reach out to them because they have relationships with all those people because they were never in the religion. And they're like, the Jehovah's Witnesses are happy to have, to talk to their extended family who never were a part of it, but you can never talk to the family who used to be a part of it. I could reach out to them, but I don't really have any members who've left the religion.
I did notice something that I thought was, it almost brought tears to my eyes that, so in the documentary, there's Ryan Sutter, correct?
Yeah.
And he was on his way to Brooklyn because I think he had a girlfriend or something and she wanted to take him to Brooklyn. And he said, well, while we're there, we'll stop at the Watchtower because he had never been to New York City. Right. Okay.
This is after he got out of the religion, but he's like, oh, we have to go to the Jehovah's Witness headquarters.
Right. Which is based in New York City, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is it the Watchtower is based there or JW in general, their headquarters are there?
Actually, they were based in Brooklyn for like 100 years, and they just sold to the Kushners when Trump was president for like $1 billion, all of their property. And they moved and built a TV studio. They had been building it already in upstate New York in Patterson. So they've now moved to Patterson. So it's like a couple hours away from the city of New York. But yeah, the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses is there.
But Watchtower still in Brooklyn?
No. Watchtower. No. Is like synonymous. So it's like Watchtower Bible and Tract Society is the corporation that the religion uses as their, that's basically a book publishing company.
That's the propaganda. Right.
They put out that magazine, the propaganda, right? That they bring to your house every Sunday. Okay. So Ryan got a phone call that his brother had broke his leg and he was wearing a cast, and which is something I want to talk about a little bit here. He had no health insurance And I don't know where the cast was put on, but ultimately the cast was put on incorrectly. It formed a blood clot and he passed away. And Ryan got that phone call from somebody. I don't know whether he ever made it to Brooklyn or not, but he when his brother Rhett died, there was this huge gathering at Rhett's home, right? Yeah, where everybody went
to Lake.
Okay. And Ryan was shunned. He was not allowed in the house. He had to stay in the backyard and or the front yard. And there was when Ryan was telling the story, he did say that over time he was getting phone calls from people that were still in JW. So what I'm getting at here is that while you're not supposed to talk to people who are shunned or what's the other word they use when you're excommunicated from
there? They use the word disfellowship.
Or disfellowship. Yeah, excommunication. That's the one, yes. What's
happening. Okay. Yeah. Defellowship. That's the word I'm looking for. That he did get some calls, like from James Zimmerman, who was still in, and he's whispered. He said that when I hugged you at the house, I wanted to whisper in your ear, "You're right. There was no Noah's Ark," or something like that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, some of the JW people that are still in will reach out to an ex-member sometimes. Secretly.
Yeah. So this is, you're making a good point. This is that he's bringing up those things in the film and in his personal story because they were strange. That's not supposed to happen.
Correct.
The disconnection is complete. You don't reach out. But on an individual basis, some people might. So like I had a friend, like my bandmate, he got kicked out of the religion, disfellowshipped by the leaders. He would call me and I would answer the phone. He would call my brother and my brother would answer the phone. And then he would call our other friend and he would answer the phone. And we would talk. We'd be like, "Oh, did that guy call you?" "Yeah, he called me too. Oh my God." And it's like, then we talk to a disfellowshipped person, which is punishable.
Punishable, right.
But like in this case, yeah, Ryan wasn't doing the reaching out. It was active Jehovah's Witnesses are reaching out to the disfellowship person, which is like that never happens. And so Ryan was bringing that up in his story because it's so unprecedented that was worth mentioning. That where people were like, "You made such an impact on me, and I still love you." And I think that also says something about the community they had created. That wasn't just the only thing they have in common is that they read the Watchtower magazine, and they're, you know, they're programmed to believe in their propaganda and their belief system and that it's the end of the world. That's not the thing that drew them together. It was much deeper than that. It was, they made art together. They had, I like to joke, like being in a band is like being in a successful polyamorous relationship. And so like that kind of emotional bond you have making art and singing and like celebrating someone's artistry and like collaborating together is a much deeper core bond than sharing cult programming.
Let's talk about Cindy for a moment. I found her to be extraordinary. Now, Cindy, how is she related to Eric? Because they have the both same last name.
Yeah, so Cindy, her maiden name is Iverson. But she married Eric after getting out of the religion. They knew each other in the religion. They made music together. And then getting out, they were like, they really like were bonded still, and they stayed together. And they then married. So it's Eric and Cindy Elvendahl.
That they are husband and wife. Okay, I didn't know whether she was his brother or, but I knew she was related to him, by marriage now. So
yeah,
Cindy was,
it's a lot in the movie. It's a lot of information at once.
Yeah, but not. That's why I want to watch it again, because I was watching it from a different perspective. I was just jotting notes down and stuff. So now I want to go back and watch it again to fully appreciate. It's a work of art, Scott. It really is. You did just a phenomenal job of that.
Means a lot to hear that. It's not just a documentary about a cult. It's like, really me like putting together an archive of terabytes of archive footage and music and like, curating it into like this is their story over 25 years. It's like their life story almost.
I was just, it warmed my heart to see these young people that were beginning to critically think and doubt the beliefs. Cindy, I can't quote her, but she said something about, she said to herself at 17, if this is what I'm going to believe the rest of my life, I really better look into this. You know, I think that's what something she said along those lines.
Yeah.
And the band came together, and it was just a beautiful story of how a group of young people, I'm going to use the word stuck in this cult, started to, I'm going to use the word band together. <It's> like, they banded together to form a band and go to these music festivals and create this beautiful, and some of the music was just phenomenal. And they're still around. You just made this, right, in 2022?
Yeah, it just they're came out around this year, actually. And so what's actually really cool is the Nuclear Gopher, in this, the film also chronicles like the formation and collapse of an indie record label inside the religion. And that it's called Nuclear Gopher. And that has just rebooted this year. So Ryan Sutter is just reopened the studio after like it being off for 20 years. And wow. He produced a record with his old band from a few years ago doing his original songs. And then he did a whole new album that just came out. So it's Ryan Sutter. If you look him up on Spotify, it's available. Capistrano's the new album. And also Eric and Cindy have formed a new project. So if you actually, they're active artists right now making art that just released an album under Sakura and Kuro. So if you go to nucleargopher.com, I believe is the website, you can see all the new albums, which is so cool. Like just as the film came
That's
out,
amazing.
They rebooted the record label and they all have art coming out right now. And also James in the movie released a book. And so he's looking at doing some more creative work as well.
What was the website? What was the website that I think it was Ryan had was he was the one also, I think this should be mentioned and just correct me because I don't have all the names straight. Who was the one that first live streamed a song on the internet back in the 90s?
That was Ryan Sutter. Yeah.
It was Ryan Sutter. Okay.
The Lavone, his first like teenager band he did with his brothers, the Lavone, who's featured heavily in the early part of the film. Yeah, that's a really cool little fact that this scene was so early to the internet and Ryan was so early to just be have nothing to do but be creative and a Jehovah's Witness that he's like, what if we did this unprecedented thing that's never happened ever? Let's like put our album on this new thing called the internet. And it was the first live streamed album ever on the internet.
Yeah, that blew me because I'm in IT. And I remember back in the 90s when you had to use an old modem, like a 28K modem or whatever, to dial up and get in. And the connection was slow. And you had that handshake noise and all that stuff, like a fax machine does. And the fact that he live streamed or uploaded, I guess he uploaded the song. It just blew me away that this.
He had to do some things to change the size of the file so that people with those
slow modems
on a dial-up could actually listen to the music on that connection. So so he made it happen with the technology. He understood the technology enough to make it work.
And he's a software engineer today.
Impressive.
Yeah. He still does software. He like leads teams in it, but he was already doing it back in like 1994. Right. He was the guy. So it was actually interesting because in my personal story, because I met those people in Madison because I went to church after like leaving their religion, basically. And they're like, you have to check out, there's this cool music scene in Minneapolis. And they're like, they even have a whole website. And the film kind of goes into like that moment happening for people. And it was like, people were sharing the website. I got that website shared with me. And that was my first touch point with the music community was like, there's this website. Have you seen this? There's all these Jehovah's Witness bands. And I was like, oh, wow, that's incredible. I'm in a band. Maybe I should put my music on their website. And it just like, I started going to their shows. They would announce their concerts on the website. And it was like, the internet was early enough that we're like, you remembered the name of the URL.
Right.
You didn't, search wasn't really a thing yet. Like
you didn't
AOL
have Google.
Existed, but
there was no Google, right? No.
Right, exactly.
There wasn't even Yahoo. There wasn't even, I think AOL might have been the only one. And I don't even think it was a search engine at that point. So
exactly. Yeah.
The individual creative nature is ultimately what helped to lead each and every one of these people out of the box they were in, the cult they were in. And ironically, that is exactly what a cult tries to prevent because they want robots, right? They want
I mean, I know from my cult, they want everybody to behave a certain way. There's certain rules. That's why they have all that set up, because they try to control behavior. And this was their creative outlet. And it ultimately allowed them that exit and that escape, which ultimately allowed them to fully escape out of the group, which is just, I'm just going to say to the audience, you have to go watch it. You have to go watch it, because it's very inspiring. Oh. Whether you're XJW or not, whether you've been in a cult or not, I just say go watch it. It's an inspiring story, and it's worth tuning in.
I've never been in a cult, although some people call AA a cult. That was a joke. I was blown away by this documentary. I just remembered the question I had for you. So, you
I didn't
are
tell them to say any of this, by the way, audience. They're just being authentic right now.
No, yeah. Melody does a lot of the producing of the podcast. So whatever she says, I'm like, okay, let's do it. As long as it's cult related. And I had no idea what I was about to watch, and I got blown away by it. Here's the question that just escaped my mind, you know, a minute ago. You're on, I think it's great, fantastic that you got Amazon to how does that work? Do you approach Amazon and say, do you have to pay them? How does that work?
Distribution's a huge thing I had to learn how to do, because like I'm a filmmaker, but I didn't ever work in the business of film. I'm not like a Hollywood guy. So I had to learn how to do all this stuff. And just to keep it simple, filmhub.com is a new tech company that's sort of disrupting the industry and allowing people to independently distribute their films. And it's called an aggregator, not a distributor. So they have like 115 different streaming services that they work with around the world. And so by just uploading the correct file types in the ways that they ask, they are able to distribute it out to all these people, deliver the files to. So it's on Apple, Amazon, Tubi TV, YouTube are the big ones. And there's like 10 more that are smaller, and they're all on the website, witnesscenter.com.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's all like just out there because of, I just like,
it's kind of like podcasting. My distributor, I upload and they do the rest. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the question. When and can you be on Netflix?
The answer is no. Netflix does a very different style of media curation. They basically only work with big studios or they create their own content. It used to be different, of course. They used to just distribute other people's movies and DVDs, right? And then they started doing the streaming thing. So they've had an evolution. So like right now, Netflix's big thing that they're doing for independent films is they're going out to like Uganda and buying up all the best art and putting it on their platform and licensing their movies and then making future deals with the local creators in that country or Saudi Arabia. And so they're out getting their fingers into the rest of the global market, trying to open new markets. They're not like, if you get into Netflix, you could. And I did approach Netflix with my first sales agent, who's our executive producer, Eric Klein with Glucose. He did approach Netflix through his connections, and they did reject it. So not Netflix, unfortunately. And so another one, like Hulu, also operates in a similar way. So there's some of the big streamers have their own, they all have their own way of getting content. In this case, it's sort of like a neutral, whoever's willing to accept the film through the Film Hub platform, that's who's going to take it.
How about HBO?
Similar idea. I think they're even more highly curated, or like A24 or Paramount. Like they want to put their brand on very specific things, and they know what they're going after. They're not going after a small little thing. I mean, it would be awesome. If you're out there, if you're listening as an executive for any of these big platforms, please. I have a non-exclusive deal. I'll cancel them all to get on your platform. Like, just reach out to me.
It was easy to find.
I just think if they watched it, did you search for it, Melody?
Yeah, I knew the title, I searched for it on Amazon and found it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I had to search for it too. That's the point I'm getting at, is how do you get on the front page of Amazon? I guess.
Oh, yeah. They call that the carousel, and it's a part of the marketing. So what helps, so Amazon could say like, hey, if you like this kind of film, here it is. And also Apple could do the same thing, or Tubi. Like if you watch this kind of film or you like this film in your list, here's another film like it. Other people have liked it, right? And what really helps make that happen, most people don't understand how that works, but I've been learning how it works. If you get into Rotten Tomatoes, and it's on Rotten Tomatoes, you can go to my film on Rotten Tomatoes and Witness Underground, like search for Rotten Tomatoes, and that's a film review site.
Right.
And I can't pay anyone to get a review there. So I need user reviews, I need critics to like go review the movie. And so if you watch the film and it resonated with you and you leave a review there, that helps it get put into lists.
We'll be doing that. Yeah. As soon as the show's over, we will do that for you.
And I also noticed you're on IMDb.
Yes.
I saw that you wrote the description.
Yeah, right? I mean, I did everything. So yeah, I wrote everything.
Yeah. But you've been busy and you're not done yet.
It's true. Yeah. So. I'm just beginning to figure out film marketing. So if there's anyone out here who wants to make a film or who does make films and they want to like do a piece on any topic, but cults especially, I'm very well versed in that area. I'm happy to teach or show you what I did. So as a filmmaker, awesome. Like reach out.
Awesome. I love that.
Fantastic. Yeah. Awesome. You know, Melody and I have been, we're dabbling in watching documentaries and reviewing them just to put it in between some of the interviews we do to break it up. And just by far, this was phenomenal. And we'll do whatever we can. We'll go to Rotten Tomatoes. I think IMDb, you can also rate it, right?
Leave a review there. Since you watch on Amazon, you can also leave a review on Amazon. That helps boost the algorithm. And there's a small, those are the big three, actually. Those would be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
We will definitely do. We'll put all that in the show notes. So,
anyone talking about the movie helps. Put a thumbs up on any of those sites.
I did do that. So, which means that the algorithm is going to show me more documentaries.
Exactly.
And
is it specific to JW? So I did.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I did a thumbs up. Does that mean I'm going to get more JW, or am I going to get just more documentary about cults?
Both.
Who knows? I mean, probably about cults. I don't think you're going to get. There's not many about JWs. So.
Yeah, which is a shame because it should be. Well, that's the whole point.
It is a good one. I'll mention Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk. And a friend, I got to know the person who wrote the book that got turned into the movie. It's so quirky and weird and fun. Like, I love that film. And that's about Jehovah's Witness experience as well. Mm. Told in like an 80s punk rock perspective. It's cool.
Okay.
And you can get him on probably to talk about the film, the author.
Oh, well, good.
Well, that's what I was... Melanie and I talked about this earlier. We'd like to know if you want to send anybody our way from either that documentary or anybody else's, we'd be more than happy to put them on. We're here to bring awareness to these cults and the fact of what they're doing to, like you said, families. And one of the things that broke my heart watching this was in the very beginning, Ryan said that many of his friends who were gay committed suicide because...
Yeah, it's a big problem.
Big problem. And here comes my speech, Melody. The law enforcement is not doing anything about this. And I'm not going to go off on that. I go off on it every episode. But it's just horrible. It's just horrible. It breaks my heart that people that have to take their lives because they were ashamed for belonging to something. And which many of them were born into. They didn't join willingly, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay. Scott, give us... I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to pitch this documentary, and then we'll wrap it up and say goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to segue off of that topic of suicide, I mean, that is something that's a big deal in the religion. That's a big thing outside of this particular religion, but I think it's a big thing in all of these types of coercive, manipulative groups. And, you know, telling these stories helps humanize the lived cult experience. And a lot of people think like there's a 0 to 1, like when were you a part of it? When have you become part of when have you left it and gotten into the normal society? And it's always this really long, like meandering journey. And it can take 10 years, 20 years, 50 years for some people to like unwind the programming or realize that it's a lie or they've been manipulated. And it's not easy. Like, be kind to these people if you meet them, teach them something at your door if you talk to them. If you see them on the street, like ask them questions about their real beliefs. The film is a piece that's really important to me. I wanted to tell my story through it, and I feel like I'm really proud of what we made. I think it did a good job of me being able to live sort of autobiographically, like through these characters. Like, my story is embedded in there. I was a musician. I had these like coming out moments. I went through the flub is the issue for me. Ryan's exact issue is my issue. So I got to tell my story through them, and now I'm comfortable being on camera and telling my story directly. And their music's incredible, and music is a huge. I have personally experienced the power of making art as a way to cope with the religion, and then making art around music to process the experience of getting out. And I feel like they, to such an extreme level on all those topics, have demonstrated such an incredible thing about their experience living in it and getting out of this thing through music and art. Like their albums, the coming out albums, basically, like leaving the Jehovah's Witnesses experience, as Ryan says in the film. He did 3 albums about that, and so did a few other people in that scene. And there's a lot of musicians in the scene that we didn't even show in the film. There's an entire body of work, and there's so many artists who've reached out to me since that I've interviewed about their leaving their faith experience, and they've made entire albums about it. Like, it's a thing. So like, maybe going and playing guitar or learning, you know, go play with music if you're going through something in your life. It doesn't have to be a religious thing. And I think the people that we really wanted to reach mostly with this film were people who never had an experience with a cult, to help them understand that this is a thing that everyone processes. It's actually a mental health thing and an identity issue. Like, we all have different identities. Like, you even mentioned AA, like with, you know, substance use and building community around that. But then, like, is that what you want your identity to be? Is that you used to do something, or you don't want to do a thing? Like, maybe we have to go process through that too. And we're all on a different journey. I think the film kind of demonstrates that we're all on a different journey. And if you haven't had any experience with this religion, this is a good touch point to understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I do have one more question, because and Melanie and I talked about it off camera, and I know the answer, but I don't know why. The drummer, the gentleman with the long blonde hair, he sat in to do the drums for the filming, correct?
Yeah.
But he had nothing to do with it. What happened to the drummer of the band?
It's a good question. He lives in the SoCal now, on Oceanside, I think. His name's Cam. He was a great guy. Basically, making the movie was interesting, because what you see in the film is a live performance at the opening and the center to transition from the past to the present. And then to close the film out, we like bookend the movie with this band. But that's not the band, actually. And they hadn't actually played together for about 11 years at that point.
Okay.
So when I was like, I think it'd be a really cool way to tell the story of this experience you all lived by having a live performance. Can we get the band back together one day to shoot and like play these old songs? And their drummer wasn't in town. So the bassist, Chad Rieger, who we didn't mention, from Ghost Army, they're all still active musicians, and they have friends all over the city in Minneapolis. But he's like, hit up his buddy Cam. He's like, hey, can you fill in for drums on drums for this thing? And so like, he never heard any of those songs in his life, and he played them all for the movie.
I could have thought he fit right in. He did a fantastic job. But you see this gentleman playing the drums, but nowhere was he mentioned. I think somewhere at the end you mentioned something that he was a fill-in, but I didn't know why.
He has no affiliation with the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
He grew up with some other religious thing, and I don't think he's religious. I'm not quite sure. Well, I only met him the one time, actually.
Yeah.
So we were busy that day.
All right. Melody, you have any final thoughts?
I do have some final thoughts. I'm going to say, I love the fact that you're encouraging, and I'm going to encourage especially people who have never been in a cult to watch this, because as we discussed in Carol Murchison's episode, that part of bringing awareness is there are so many people that have no idea what's going on inside these groups. They are completely clueless. And what that actually does is create more victims of these cults, because the more you know, the less likely you are to join a group. The more you know those red flags, those warning signs, the idea that if something isn't resonating right, when you start to look into a religion or a group and you're feeling like, But if you don't know what those are red flags, you don't know. You're just being pulled in, like somebody being pulled into a toxic relationship. So the more we educate people, the less control and the less ability to manipulate these groups have. And so I'm 100% going to say that anyone listening out there who has never been in a cult, go watch this. Go watch this documentary. Go educate yourself. Because also for people like Carol, who is representing these cult victims, who, like she said, I want people on my jury that know something about cults, that have seen these documentaries, that have listened to these podcasts, and that have been part of these groups or have seen something on the internet about it, because they're going to have more of a clue of how people can be coerced into doing things they wouldn't normally do, how that all works and how you become a victim in these groups when a lot of people don't understand how people become victims in these groups. And I love that you're encouraging that. And I'm going to double that and double down and say, yes, anybody who's out there, go listen or go watch it. I mean, Andrew's not in a cult. He went and watched it. He's going to watch it again. I'm going to watch it again. And I'm going to say too that I love the fact that it's covered JW's. JW's has a special place in my heart. Andrew will tell you that our very first interview that wasn't my interview was with actually an ex-JW elder, actually from New York. But I'll say his name, Gary Ault. And he had actually interviewed with me on a YouTube channel that I had done previously. So, you know, Gary, oh, amazing. Gary came on the show. He was our very first interview.
On my channel too.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, Gary, that's amazing. I love Gary. I think Gary's great. And Gary's a musician too. So yeah, I we've actually our two of our other episodes are also, we have covered more XJWs than any other, but I think it's because it is such a widespread cult and religion that there's a lot more, survivors out there. So yes, you can listen to Gary's episode on number 3. We also have, episode number 19 and 24, also ex-Jehovah's Witness episodes. But Scott, we so appreciate you coming on the show. We love to collaborate with other people that want to do the same thing, which is what we are doing. We want to all bring awareness. So we're not competition with each other. We're all here too. You have a show too. That we would love to come on your show. That would be amazing. Yeah.
Banana Allen Films on YouTube. I want to plug a couple things. Sorry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So my film had its international premiere at DeCult Cult Awareness Conference in New Zealand. And that's the world's first cult awareness conference. And so there's movement here. And what was really special about that is I had Janja Lalich as the keynote speaker. And she wrote, basically she's 79 and she's kind of retiring from the space, but she's written a bunch of books. And she has developed a method called, Bounded Choice. So look up her work on Bounded Choice, because she's more like you, Andrew, in that she wasn't a part of a cult, but she did when she was 20 join like a political cult. So something outside the religious space. Most people think of cults as religious. And then she got out at like her 30s, and then like now she's been, like, did a PhD in the space. So her education and her perspective and personal experience is incredible. And she's just an incredibly like no BS kind of person. I love her. I got to meet her here and hang out. It's awesome. And then DeCult Cult Awareness, one of the things that really struck me was that it has people from many different walks of life, beautifully curated to tell their stories. It had 2x2s. It had Children of God, ex-members of all these different groups. ISTA, which is like more on the sex therapy side of things, or like that world, and yoga groups, and like all these different kinds of groups that you don't really know how they're all the same, but wow, it was just so expansive, like human experiences with these types of course of control groups, even political. And what was really interesting is there's even human rights activists there, and people in the government came to see what is this all about, because like New Zealand is special and that it has like a lot of classic last century style like real cult leaders and like issues with CSA. But the whole world has these problems. It's not just New Zealand. It's just like in New Zealand, if someone leaves, like it's a tiny place. So like they're your neighbor. Someone left a cult. Where in the States, it's like, well, they end up on the streets doing heroin and then, or something, who knows where they end up.
Yeah.
Also controlled again by some other nefarious group. And then the big resource at the end of the film, the last one of the three I want to say is recoveringfromreligion.com. It's the only thing I plug in the movie, and it's just, quiet in the credits. But like that really helped me find resources. So if you're out there wondering, you want an education, or you're having some experience, you want to learn something in a neutral place, a secular place, or to find a secular therapist or something to do with religion, this website's incredible for that. And they were represented at decult as well, which is really cool to see.
I'm going to throw you a suggestion. I don't know if you know of this gentleman, a guy named John Breen, and he runs a website called cultpodcast.com. And he has all the cult podcasts from around the world.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so check him out. And if you want to get on more podcasts, go. Yeah. Just I'll even shoot you his email.
I'd love that. Yeah, please do.
Yeah, he's on top of all the cult podcasts. He
follows them all.
Anyway, you get the idea. Yeah. I'll send you the information.
Distributes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Scott, would you come back when you said you might do your own story?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Maybe just more, maybe not so much a documentary, but maybe YouTube, a really good YouTube video kind of thing. Well, I'll start there.
Come back. Whatever else you put out artistically and you want to promote, welcome back anytime.
Absolutely.
You. Well, I guess I encourage people to, if you like the movie, you listen to the podcast, go watch the movie. And if you want more, I actually have a YouTube channel, Banana Island Films, which has one of the playlists is the XGW Coming Out series, which is my original project for this topic, which is interviewing people about their journey getting out and then having a life after. And it's mostly former Jehovah's Witnesses, but it's branched out a little bit.
Awesome.
All right. Well, listen, we'll get get all that in the show notes, and we will promote this very heavily.
I really appreciate it. And anyone out there, feel free to reach out to write a review if you watch it. Put a thumbs up on any of the apps you watch it on. I really appreciate all of that. And I really appreciate you both for having me on and diving into this. It's been
Scott,
a pleasure.
We appreciate you coming on. Absolutely. Just phenomenal. So, all right, everybody, Scott Holman,
Witness
Underground. Go watch the documentary. Everything will be in the show notes. Witness Underground. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, we want to thank Scott Holman, creator, editor, and producer and director of the documentary Witness Underground, for coming on the show. And actually, Scott reached out to us. Scott reached out to us via Instagram asking to come on the show, and we were excited to have him. And I'm so glad we did. It was a great episode. And Andrew and I did both enjoy his documentary. It was very well done. We do highly recommend that you go watch it, whether you're ex-JW or not. It's a good documentary and worth a watch.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter what cult you're from. I always call them ex-survivors. If you're an ex-cult member or a survivor, it does not matter what cult you came from. This video, this documentary shows what cults do to families and how they break you down. And it's just a phenomenal documentary. And everybody knows I am open and honest. And when Melody told me that we got approached by Scott and he wanted to come on the show, and she said, you have to go watch this documentary. Here comes the honest truth. I rolled my eyes because I'm very limited on time. And I'm like, oh God, I got to watch another documentary. Because I just, not meaning I don't want to do it. I'm just like, where am I going to squeeze that in? But I was able to do it, I think, Sunday morning. And I, with my cup of coffee, I sat in bed and I watched it. And oh my God, I am so happy I did. And I'm so happy I found the time. And for everybody, it's a phenomenal documentary. And Scott came on to promote it. So I'd like anybody listening to this, go check it out. It's on, where was it? It's on Amazon. It's on Tubi.
Tubi, yep. Tubi's free. And mine was free on Amazon. I don't know if you ended up having to pay like $1.99 or something, but
I have Business Prime. I don't know if that has something to do with it, but it was $1.99. For me, it was worth it. I mean, it's part of the podcast process. If I have to go pay $2, $2 isn't going to break me. Come on.
Right.
So regardless, if you can get it for free, definitely watch it. That's all I can say.
For sure. And, you know, Scott's on the same line as us. He wants to bring awareness about these groups and these cults and what they do. And that's exactly what this documentary does. So if you want to support cult awareness, that's if you go watch that documentary, not only are you going to be entertained, but you're going to be helping to support the cause. And that's part of what we want to do and we want to help Scott do.
And when you watch it, give it the thumbs up, because like on any, like, I don't know, people are seeing on Netflix and any streaming service now, when you finish watching it, they ask you, do you like this? So give it the thumbs up. And on Amazon, you can, if you watch that, you can give it a review. And I left my review. So the more reviews he gets, the more it gets pushed up in the algorithm. So,
and he said Rotten Tomatoes. So, if you go on Rotten Tomatoes and look for Witness Underground, give him a review on there too. I went on there. Right now, I think you can't do the tomatoes. He only can do the stars. So I went on there and I gave him the 5 stars because I think that you have to get so many stars before you get to the tomato rating. But yes, go on to Rotten Tomatoes too, as he recommended, because that really helps him out with his advertising and his ratings as well. Gets it out there and will push it further up so that people will see it and watch it. So once again, Scott, we thank you so much for coming on the show. And we so support your cause. And we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. And as always, your support is always greatly appreciated by us. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. And also don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these topics.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share with us, reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you are an ex-cult member in need of additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out my other podcast, Anonymous Andrew, Life and the Choices We Make, for more content and more me. Oh, and okay, we're reading off a new script. Yes. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining... God, we'll get it right one day. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can support us through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in our show notes. Simply what that means is that it's like donating to the podcast.
Yes.
There's no commitment. You're not signing up. You're not becoming a member. It's simply
not a monthly charge.
$5.
Yes.
Nope. No, no. So you'll see the link in the show notes. Click on it. And I think through Venmo or PayPal, you can donate $5 or $10, whatever you can afford. All right. And every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.